everyone, and welcome back to the podcast about Poland in English. My name is Anna.
And I'm Ewa. And today we'll be speaking with Marta Zboralska, and our topic is art. We'll be talking about art, censorship, both in the context of Poland, but we will also mention probably some comparisons with the UK.
Marta is an art historian, a lecturer at Oxford University, and a member of the University's and College Union, ECU, for solidarity.
Hello, hello. I'm very happy to be here.
So without further ado, do you want to let me start by talking a little bit about your research, your academic work, and what sort of art you're interested in?
Yeah, of course. So I'm a historian of modern and contemporary art. And so that means I mainly work on 20th and 21st century art. And my area of research is Poland, but this is a bit of a tricky question for me in some ways, because I don't really think of myself as a Polish art historian as such. I trained in the UK and I've really always worked on Western art, actually, up until my PhD, which was about Poland. And I think, you know, talking about art in a global context is in some ways more productive than kind of thinking about oneself as a Polish art historian. So even though Poland is my area of expertise, I think Poland is of relevance to everyone. So I think of myself in a more global context. But yeah, I do know a lot about Poland. So
we love that answer, actually. Although we are a Polish-focused podcast, I guess we just needed to narrow it down a little bit in terms of, you know, we'll be probably talking about Polish institutions and a lot of Polish artists today, but that doesn't mean it's just a separate sort of area that's completely different to everything else that we'll be talking about in general themes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm. What particularly sparked your interest in Polish art, if I can ask? Was it like a moment or like an exhibition you saw and you decided to focus on it?
I mean, the honest answer is that I knew who I wanted to do my PhD with, and my supervisor said, "You speak Polish, not many people do. Why don't you do something about Poland?" And that is the honest answer. The less honest answer, I mean, obviously, you know, I am interested in Poland, and I think it is important to think about Poland and speak about Poland, as I said, in this sort of global context of modern and contemporary art. And I think actually there are many misconceptions as well about Polish art, and especially about Polish art during the communist period and the position of Poland and Eastern Europe more broadly on the global art scene at the time. And I think that's one of the things that I feel quite passionate about, making people realize that, you know, Eastern Europe was not actually this isolated region, but there was a lot of exchange, and Poland played a really important role in that global exchange. And yeah, maybe even more important role than today in some ways, paradoxically.
And I guess, like, in the broadest possible terms, like, how would you describe Polish art, like, maybe currently or in the past, or perhaps Eastern European art? Do you think there's, like, a particular aesthetic or particular trends that are worth mentioning?
It's really interesting, especially, actually, Poland is a really interesting example. I teach Eastern European art more broadly, or actually what I call Central European art, because in my teaching I try to focus on communist countries that were not part of the Soviet Union, so like Poland, Czechoslovakia, Albania, all of those countries. But thinking about Polish art today, actually, a lot of artists are interested in Polishness more than perhaps... I mean, it seems like there are sort of two groups of artists. There are artists that make the kind of art that they could make wherever in the world that they were from, really participating in global conversations about things that are perhaps universal, like form, and, you know, making sculptures that are very much responding to previous developments in art history. But then there are artists who are interested in Polishness specifically, and responding to a sort of crisis perhaps in the Polish identity in the current moment. And this has also sort of translated into some of the exhibitions actually organized in Poland in recent years. So, for example, in 2012, there was an exhibition at the Museum of Modern Art in Warsaw called New National Art, which was all about actually right-wing art and maybe even creative practice that does not count as art. For example, The kind of banners that people bring to football matches. And so this question of sort of Polishness and nationality has actually been a very important one in Polish art for at least 20 years now, actually.
Yeah, so it's been of interest for artists themselves, but also for curators and for institutions, right?
Yeah.
That's something I will start talking about in a second.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes, and probably another thing we would definitely want to talk about is the importance of institutions and how they also sort of shape our perception of art, right? And how they create those spaces and often shape the way we perceive, like also curate those things for us so that we decide what is art and what is not, which I guess is another very big theme in the art world and how that influences art itself. But I guess especially interesting in the context of Poland, because we will be diving into how those institutions are very often politicized and how they try to influence what can or cannot be presented, right?
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. And this sort of institutional response to the questions of nationality and Polishness, I think, is a particularly important one in the context of the law and justice, intrusion or intervention into existing structures.
Yeah, so, I mean, the topic of, like, Polishness in art and, you know, taken both from a left-wing and a right-wing perspective, as you mentioned, has been of interest for a long time. And I remember, like, going to these exhibitions when I was in high school. So it's something that was already, like, in the air. But, of course, things changed quite dramatically under the current government, right, over the past, like, 7-8 years. So I guess, yeah, maybe if you could, like, sketch a little bit about, like, what's been happening to arts institutions.
Yeah, of course. So I guess maybe I can begin by just describing what the kinds of institutions that there are in Poland in terms of art galleries. So in terms of public institutions, the sort of basic division is state-run galleries that are directly run by the state. Then you've got municipal galleries that are funded by the city, but also regional ones. So certain regions will also fund institutions. And some of these structures are a legacy of the communist way of running things. So, for example, in communist Poland, there was this institution called the Central Bureau of Exhibitions and the National Gallery of Art, Zachęta, one of the key galleries in Poland, used to be the Central Bureau of Exhibitions, and they had outposts in cities. So there were sort of galleries that were centrally run by Zachęta, but in various cities. So that's kind of been translated into local structures now. And then there's of course the private sphere, which is quite interesting, but maybe we can talk about this later. But in terms of the state-run institutions, the quite unique thing about them is that the director of every major state-run gallery gets appointed by the Minister of Culture directly. So it's not as if there's a board of trustees or any other structure in place. It's the Minister of Culture that appoints the director. And so they're appointed for limited terms, between 3 and 5 years normally. And in theory, the Minister of Culture is supposed to appoint a panel that includes experts and includes trade union representatives. And then there's a competition and anyone can apply and everybody together decides who the best candidate is. In practice, the Minister of Culture can just appoint whoever he in this case, in the current historical moment, whoever he wants. So that is what's been happening in Poland. The Minister of Culture has been replacing, at the end of their term, the directors that he thinks of as politically opposed to him, he's been replacing with law and justice adjacent directors.
Piotr Gliński. Oh yes, that's a big name in Polish.
Yeah. And I guess there's a very obvious parallel here with the episode we did recently about Polish media, right? It's widely discussed how the public media has been absolutely shamelessly, very openly taken over. But we've seen the same happening in culture, right? In cultural institutions. A kind of control of hearts and minds through that.
Yeah, I think drawing these parallels is really interesting. We keep on seeing the same strategy being applied by the law and justice government by infiltrating certain institutions, and that includes courts, that includes art institutions, and then also media. And it's very interesting how they can use also the existing structure there that's been there for years in order to do that. And I think what you just described shows us how that is very easy for them to use for their advantage.
Exactly, yeah. So something that I also, I think, feel is important to highlight is that this, it's always been this way. Well, not always, but, you know, since 1989 or whatever, it's been this way that the Minister of Culture has always appointed the director of the gallery since that law was put into place in post-communist Poland, and it's not a new thing. So even before peace came into power, the Law and Justice Party, art was always politicized in that way. It's nothing new. It's just that now the people in charge have really abhorrent right-wing views, and so I think it's wrong to speak of politicization of art. And the politicization of art as a recent development, art is always political, right? And I think one of the things that I find useful to think about in this context is that actually we need to be honest about just the kind of politics we agree with and the kind of politics we disagree with, and just have a political commitment to the left, right? So say, well, I disagree. Art is always political, yes, and I disagree with the current state of things because I'm left-wing, as opposed to saying, oh, it's been politicized, it's been hijacked. I think that's not a productive kind of way of thinking.
Art has always been political, and it continues to be, right? It is about power structures a lot of the time, and it is about like what's kind of seen as respected and canonized. Like in the UK, we see constant debates about like diversity in art, decolonization, right? Where the artworks are coming from, what kind of history are we telling through what's presented? But I sort of feel like here feels a little bit more like a dialogue with the public, whereas I think what's happened in Poland has been so far removed from any kind of like democratic conversation that it's even hard to try to influence those institutions.
Yeah, and I also guess, I think peace realizes the power of art in terms of like propaganda, right? The message that they can push.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think this is so crucial also in an international context, actually, because there was this exhibition, I can't remember if it was a year or two ago now, but at the William Morris Gallery, which is in Walthamstow in London, Young Poland, so about the Young Poland movement, which is basically this sort of patriotic nationalist movement in culture to preserve and uphold Polish identity.
When historically?
Oh, the young Poland movement.
Yeah.
So it's connected to, so basically the way that, so Poland was not on the map of Europe, right, between, for 123 years until the end of the First World War. So it's connected to the formation of the Polish state and the sort of early years of the Polish state and the need to establish a sort of fixed Polish identity. So that's sort of, yeah, it's context, but it's been, The exhibition has had very good reviews and has been sort of universally recognized as important in promoting Polish culture in the UK. But it was also really heavily politicized. And actually, Piotr Gliński personally visited the exhibition and used it as a PR opportunity. And there are photos of him at William Morris Gallery. And, you know, William Morris was obviously a socialist, right? This is a gallery that is... And many of the artists connected to Young Poland, you know, they weren't all sort of right-wingers. And this sort of narrative of this patriotic narrative that peace wants to push very frequently oversimplifies the complexity of art that deals with nationality. And the Polish state kind of provided funding, and one of the curators it was a collaboration between an institution in Poland in Krakow and some curators that work here in the UK, and one of its curators is also a peace adjacent person. Mm-hmm. So it's very complicated. I think this is something that I see a lot of, that people in the UK who promote Polish culture or claim to do so just enter into partnerships with the Law and Justice government and with the Polish embassy and end up being used for political means, maybe even unknowingly, or, you know, but they kind of get subsumed under peace narratives and mm-hmm. it's kind of concerning.
Yeah. We talked like in general about the takeover institutions, but to kind of illustrate, you want to maybe give some examples of these appointments and what they led to?
Yeah, of course. So the most recent one was at the Museum of Art in Łódź, where there was a director called Jarosław Suchan, who is a very well-known figure in the international art world and has done a lot. So he was appointed in 2006 and he's just been replaced late last year. And he's a very important figure, and the Museum of Art in Łódź is an incredibly important institution. It's the second oldest museum of modern art in the world. It has a very important radical left-wing avant-garde tradition. It was founded by Polish avant-garde artists. And so Jarosław Suchan's work was really trying to continue that legacy. And it really, his curatorial team put on a series of really incredible exhibitions. And so recently, he was replaced with a man whose name I actually had to look up, because these people are so insignificant, these directors that keep on being appointed, that art historians, such as me, just don't even know who they are. But a man called Andrzej Biernacki, who is just, a person that does not have any really relevant previous experience. I mean, he was just in charge of some regional institutions, and so it's not just that I disagree with the politics and the way that he's been appointed because of his politics. It's also that he is just not prepared yet to take on the leadership of such an important museum of art. But there are also more complex figures when it comes to these newly appointed directors of art. And I think Piotr Bernatowicz is the current director of the Center of Contemporary Art, Ujazdowski Castle in Warsaw, a really important exhibition, a really important gallery. He's a more complex figure, and I think he's someone who we should talk about, because his biography, I think, makes clear why it's important to consider the specific politics that people have, and not just the politicization of art. So Piotr Bernatowicz actually has a PhD. So first of all, he is an art historian, and he wrote his PhD on the reception of Picasso in Eastern Europe. So apparently, I have not read the book that came out of that, but apparently it's a really good book. And apparently his views used to be far more moderate. And he was actually a follower of an important or associated with perhaps the most important Polish art historian, Piotr Piotrowski. So Piotr Piotrowski is very well known among art historians of Eastern Europe, and has written a lot about Eastern European art as a category and the political importance of it. And particular importance is that Piotr Piotrowski was also briefly director of the National Museum in Warsaw. And when he was director of the museum, he came up with this concept of the critical museum. So his idea was that museums should always engage in self-criticism, and museums should be these self-reflective spaces, and also should be engaged in politics and society more broadly. So they shouldn't try to stay neutral. They should be involved. Mm-hmm. So the thing about Bernatowicz and the way that he runs the Center of Contemporary Art in Warsaw is that he kind of does that. He does that thing of, thinking about the museum critically, but he does it from a right-wing point of view. So while Piotr Piotrowski was definitely, not on the right, this idea of the critical museum seems to have been stolen and appropriated for right-wing political means. So, and this is... Yeah,
that
this
is so interesting, actually.
Can you explain with some examples of what it looks like?
Yeah, so, for example, Piotr Bernatowicz organized this exhibition called Political Art. And this was an incredibly controversial exhibition that included just openly racist, anti-Semitic, misogynistic works. And he actually, even before becoming director of the Center for Contemporary Art, he had, at his previous institutions, organized exhibitions like that before. So that was just a continuation of it. But, to him, political art is right-wing art, because in his mind, this is the kind of art that has been suppressed, right? So he thinks that he's been silenced and his artist friends have been silenced, and that it is somehow a radical gesture to finally include these racist, homophobic, etc. artists. And he thinks that that is political art. And so his definition of politics is really interesting because he thinks that left-wing art is propaganda, right? But right-wing art is political art. So these categories and how unstable they are, you know, what does it mean for it to be political? What does it mean for art to be propaganda? I think that's so interesting. And the way that the right sees themselves as, you know, they see themselves as this persecuted minority group in art, right? Even though peace has obviously started taking over all of these institutions, they still think that they are some sort of a kind of disadvantaged group, and they need to therefore put on these political art exhibitions that, you know, are against political correctness, etc., etc.
We know that mechanism. We've seen it also often, like, obviously in Poland, most people think of themselves as Christians, and then although there's a clear majority in terms of who identifies as Christians, they often talk about themselves as a marginalized group, as a group that's sort of targeted by the Western culture and who needs to really stand and fight for it and really defend their values because they're so under attack. And I feel like this links with this perfectly. It's just using this sort of narrative in order to present yourself as a group in danger who needs to really use the art in this case to show those, as you say, like very racist or sexist art. And I guess this also brings us to the question of censorship and how this links with, in general, who can decide what is the art that should be presented and what shouldn't. And I guess we can all agree that we want there to be artists from different backgrounds with different views who are able to maybe even argue or have a certain conversation around the issues that are never straightforward, but how do you ensure that it's not only one voice, that it's not a propaganda tube, and that people from those different circles can actually express themselves freely as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because this question of censorship has been really important to Polish art in the post-communist period, at least since the late 1990s, actually. So the late 1990s and the early 2000s were a time of real culture wars in Poland. Several very controversial artworks were exhibited. So, for example, Dorota Nieznalska's Passion, which was basically this crucifix with a photograph of male genitals. That work proved to be really controversial. And actually, I don't know if you've explained to your listeners what the League of Polish Families was.
No, I don't think we have yet, so feel free to elaborate.
So this man called Roman Giertych, who used to be the minister and used to be part of the peace government, even though he wasn't in Law and Justice, he was in the League of Polish Families, that's what the political party was called, who now finds himself actually on the opposition side of things. So now he's a very vocal critic of peace, and a lot of centrists have somehow forgiven him for being in the League of Polish Families. I mean, the name kind of tells you who they were. Very Christian, very conservative.
Pretty fascist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely fascist adjacent. So some people from the League of Polish Families complained about this work by Dorota Nieznalska because they thought it was offensive to Catholics to put male genitals on the cross. And so there was this incredibly long court case where originally the artist was actually sentenced to 6 months in prison because in Poland there's this law against blasphemy or, you know, offending people's religious feelings. So it was a really drawn out court battle. Eventually,
I sort of feel like we need to stop here because it's something when I was growing up, I remember the story. It was sort of obvious to me that there is a law against offending religious feelings.
Yeah.
And the longer I live outside of Poland, the more I'm like, what the hell?
Yes.
There have been court cases of multiple artists, but also of, you know, like pop singers who like made a joke about the Bible and things like that. And I don't think it's ever been used against, like, for people who criticize any other religion, obviously, it's just like the Catholic Church. But I'm a bit like,
yeah, it's actually a law against offending Catholic feelings.
Yes. It's just casually dropping it here, right? Like, blasphemy law, and then
you can go to prison, yeah.
You can go to prison for expressing your views that someone decides are offensive for
exactly.
their religious feelings. Yeah,
but thankfully she eventually got acquitted, but it honestly took like 8 or 9 years for her to be acquitted. But there are other events, like in... There's this work by the Polish artist Piotr Klański titled The Nazis, and this was a huge event as well in the Polish media. So basically this work is a set of photographs of actors, Hollywood actors, Polish actors, all sorts of actors, who were played Nazis in various films and were dressed as Nazis. So it's basically just a set of photographs of these men dressed as Nazi officers. And one of the people depicted in those photographs was the Polish actor Daniel Olbrychski. And Daniel Olbrychski got very offended to be part of this artwork, and actually ended up turning up at Zachęta, the National Gallery of Art, with a saber, which apparently was a saber that he acquired in the 70s when he was playing in this film adaptation of the Polish book The Deluge, which is all about the 17th century invasion by the Swedish. So yeah, this sort of, you know, one of the important patriotic novels. But anyway, he had a saber, so he turned up at the gallery and he slashed this artwork and to voice his opposition, basically, to being portrayed as one of the actors playing Nazis. And so, you know, there was a lot going on. And the famous Maurizio Cattelan, the Italian artist, his work that basically is a sculpture of Pope John Paul II, but hit by a meteor, right? So mm-hmm. This was a super controversial work, and a lot of, again, right-wingers at the time protested the work. And it's actually inspired a very recent work, which maybe we should mention. So one of the favorite artists of the Law and Justice Party is a man called Jerzy Kalina. And he has been very popular recently, receiving many commissions, including the monument to the victims of the Smolensk air crash, which is just basically the staircase in the middle of Warsaw. It's like the stone staircase. It's a really weird monument. Staircase to heaven, I guess. But Jerzy Kalina also made a response to the Maurizio Cattelan sculpture of the Pope being hit by a meteor. And basically in front of the National Museum in Warsaw, he made his own statue of the Pope, except holding up that meteor in a pool of red water. And it was a sort of victorious, you know, Pope John Paul II standing up and resurrecting himself and holding the meteor above his head. So, and then that became obviously the number one memeable image on the Polish internet. Everybody just found it so ridiculous. There are so many memes of that artwork.
Yeah, but I find this stuff so fascinating because, like, yeah, as you ever said, the like idea that like Catholics are the most oppressed group in Poland, that's like basically a meme. I've heard this like said earnestly by the right so many times, and yet, like, you know, if you make Catholic arts, you can get like maybe a bad review in some like niche magazine, and some people will make memes about you on Twitter. But like, if you make art that's like critical of religion or like pro-LGBT or pro-women, for example, you know, you not only will get like prevented from exhibiting in the biggest galleries, but you might actually end up in prison. And it's a bit like someone made a mean meme about you versus you can actually be arrested. And it has happened to people, right? I can give like recent examples. It has like increasingly more and more of them happening to people.
Yeah, absolutely. So for example, even during the COVID pandemic recently, when a group of artists staged a protest against the postal elections, or the possibility of postal elections, which would have favored peace, obviously, a group of artists basically recreated a very important work of art from 1967 by the artist Tadeusz Kantor, The Letter, which is basically this giant letter that people parade through the city. So they made one. They made a letter like that and took it to the Polish Sejm, the Polish House of Commons, and got fined for it initially because it was an illegal gathering of artists, you know, of more than however many people was permitted during COVID. And the letter was all about how, by trying to force through these postal elections, the government was doing something very undemocratic, and immediately the artists got fined for that. And the letter actually said what they put on the letter, which was just a really long piece of fabric, was "To live, not to die," but with a very strategically placed comma, so they put to live not, comma, to die, to basically hint at the fact that they were using the COVID pandemic and the related deaths and just you know, it was very early days at the time, so there was a lot of uncertainty and people were obviously keen to avoid going out and that includes, I guess, voting, but at the same time they were trying to weaponize that, the government, that is, was trying to weaponize that to potentially skew elections their way, and then the whole thing ended up being called off anyway, and millions of zloty were spent printing these postal ballots that were never used, and it's still a massive scandal, but obviously it's, you know, peace has shut the whole conversation down, so. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and another case that immediately comes to my mind is Elżbieta Podleśna. I think it was in 2019 that she was actually arrested during one of the protests, and the reason was she was handing out a work showing the Virgin Mary with her halo painted with the rainbow colors of the LGBT plus.
And that was literally it.
Pride flag, yes. So she basically faced the whole trial because of that. Again, using that blasphemy law that exists, and also we actually with Anna we looked up a report that was published in 2022, which is, I think, very interesting, and we might link it actually in this episode and in the description. And that report really goes into how this law been used in Poland and how, especially in the recent years, it's been very common to also basically fight your political enemies, people who are openly against the law and justice government, to then threaten them and then they can, basically that also shows, I guess, the chilling effect of what the law and justice does and how it can influence Polish art by even self-censorship and just being scared of what might happen, because obviously the consequences can be so great. And so,
yeah, absolutely. And what it's also doing is pushing artists into the private sphere and the sphere of private art galleries. So artists are increasingly cooperating with not state-run institutions, but actually private galleries, of which there are more and more, just because that actually seems to give them more freedom to do what they want and, you know, to not have to. I mean, not that those law and justice run galleries actually want to collaborate with left-wing artists, but yeah, left-wing artists end up, you know, in this private sphere of galleries and institutions, which seems very counterintuitive.
Yeah. So. And it already seems like we don't have many spaces for people to do art and to be sponsored and to have some sort of funds. So obviously that means also losing all these opportunities that could have been there but are not anymore available. And just to put this into, like, to show the scale of this in this report, it was they basically proved that since it came to power in 2015, PIS has installed its allies in management of 23 major Polish cultural institutions and artistic events, which really, I would assume that that's probably all of them in terms of, like, big major cities like Warsaw, Krakow, Łódź, or Wrocław. So that really is very scary.
Yeah, there are very few major art galleries that have not had their director replaced yet. One of the last ones standing is the Museum of Modern Art in Warsaw, and it's become this place of actually absorbing all of the people who decided to leave those exhibitions that had been taken over, ended up at the Museum of Modern Art in Warsaw as curators and just working there. But, you know, there's a limit to how many people can be employed at that institution. So I'm hearing that it's reached that limit now. And so people, can no longer just move over there. And apparently the only reason why Joanna Mitkowska, the director of the Museum of Modern Art in Warsaw has not been replaced yet, even though there was an opportunity, her term came to an end, but actually they ended up extending it, is that the new Museum of Modern Art building is currently under construction in the very center of Warsaw, right by the Palace of Culture. And this is such a big project, and it's been years in the making, and there have been so many complications that they just decided, okay, we cannot replace her now, because if we put someone new in charge, it's too risky. So even Peace actually in this case was clever enough not to do that.
Yeah, that is, like, definitely my favorite museum in Poland currently. They've got loads of interesting stuff on, like, about all kinds of things, but including, like, Polish identity and anti-fascism. But a particularly like, depressing, heartbreaking example, I think, is the example of Zachęta, right? Like, an old, like, very established, but very interesting and kind of pioneering gallery that also, like, you know, kind of held up for a long time. You know, even a few years ago, I remember going to exhibitions about, like, you know, art using, like, religious iconography. It was not like a propaganda exhibition. It was just, like, you know, artists, like, exploring religion, which I don't think would be on now. Or, you know, like, different kind of, like, feminist themes. But, like, that wouldn't happen now, right? It was also taken over.
And it's a recent one as well, right? It's 2022 that it changed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the director used to be Hanna Wróblewska. So again, a woman being replaced with a man. She is an incredibly important figure and, again, a very well-respected internationally curator and director. And, yeah, she's been replaced with someone who just does not have the experience. So in this case, it's a man called... Janusz Janowski. These men whose names are impossible to remember because they're not important. Zachęta has been a very important institution for many years. And in communist Poland, it was very important and it continues to be so. And in recent years, it put on really extraordinary exhibitions. For example, one about socialist realist art, really changing the discourse around socialist realist art, which tends to be dismissed as pure propaganda. And that is obviously a very simplistic way of thinking about socialist realist art. So there was an exhibition there that tried to change that, curated by Joanna Kordiak, who I want to give a shout out to, because Joanna Kordiak is an incredible curator. Who's responsible for some of my favorite exhibitions at Zachęta. Apparently the new director has just completely scrapped the program that the previous team had put in place. And, you know, they also lost out on funding, apparently, because he just did not want to go ahead with those exhibitions because he disagreed with them ideologically. And so the funding has been lost and God knows what kind of exhibitions we're going to see there.
Yeah. And I have a friend, maybe I won't be mentioning the name, but someone who worked at Zachęta and, you know, speaking to her and hearing how the whole institution sort of collapsed since he took over and how people just basically fled it because, you know, it also is about just being scared to... Not only in terms of curating art and not only in terms of bringing artists, but also just working in an environment when you know you have to hide your, I don't know, sexual orientation because you might be somehow targeted. And it's just really unthinkable how in so many ways it affects the whole makeup of also like Polish art world and people who are able to stay in there and work within those circumstances, I guess.
How would you say the forms of censorship and our state control of the art world compared to like what was happening under communism?
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, even Anna Rotenberg, so one of the most famous and important Polish curators and the former director of Zachęta, who actually left because of a big anti-Semitic attack on her. Anna Rotenberg, I think, said in an interview that during communism, there was obviously censorship and there were obviously things you couldn't do. However, the people in charge were at least educated, qualified people and you could reason with them. You could have a conversation with them. And she said that now the people who are in charge are so stuck in their ways and also often such dilettantes and people who just don't have the right qualifications or knowledge that it's just become farcical. So, and you know, it's interesting because in Poland during communism, we could say that there were two different ways of exhibiting. So we had the state galleries, such as Zachęta, which was at the time the Central Bureau of Exhibitions. And then there were these independent galleries that started popping up in the late 60s and in the 70s. So the first gallery that was an independent gallery was Foxhall Gallery, founded in 1966. But even those independent galleries, so-called independent galleries, I mean, there's a lot of debate about the right terminology to use here, but they were indirectly receiving state funds, right? They were still attached to... So for example, Foxhall was attached to the plastic arts, the visual arts workshop, to the visual arts workshop, which was this sort of... just basically a workshop where things were made for parades and other state events. And so they were using their money and premises, for example. Other so-called independent galleries were attached to universities or to various social clubs. So they were always receiving state funds just indirectly. And so this division into official and unofficial, actually, even in communist Poland, was sort of blurred. It was not always so easy and to kind of distinguish between them, and artists who would exhibit in those independent, so-called independent galleries would also exhibit at state galleries. And so, you know, while obviously there were certain things you couldn't do, it wasn't so clear cut. And also artists found very creative ways of opposing the politicization of art or the necessity to make only certain kinds of art by actually making art that seemed very apolitical, like abstract painting. But in the context of the politicization of life, that was a message in itself, to make art that was, you know, about itself.
Yeah. And I mean, that's partly what I have hope around. Like, I have a feeling that you can maybe at least hope that, you know, if you go to places like Zachęta and see the sort of exhibitions that are currently there, what is interesting is maybe sometimes it's possible to see something that is, you know, like you can read it in a way that is opposing, like, or it's just an irony that this is the work of art that can be presented. And maybe people who curate it don't see that irony. But for those who come in, this is very visible, right? And I feel like, you know, I definitely now look at those things that are being commissioned and I'm like, oh my God, this is actually something so, I don't know, nationalistic that, you know, you suddenly like makes you think about propaganda. They can't really control the message.
Exactly. And in a way, what you just mentioned is happening already, because at the Center for Contemporary Art, run by Piotr Bernatowicz, there was an exhibition about art of the 1980s, specifically following the introduction of martial law in Poland. Mm-hmm. So at the time, many artists actually started collaborating very directly with the church and exhibiting in church spaces. But some artworks that are part of the Center for Contemporary Art collection that were exhibited in that exhibition were by artists who are very much opposed to the Law and Justice government and actually ended up writing open letters asking for their works to be removed, saying they don't agree with it. Yet the gallery said that they wouldn't remove these works because the artists sold them, so they no longer have any control over them. But what that resulted in is that, for example, a video work by a very famous Polish artist called Józef Robakowski, titled A View from My Window, which is a recording of the view from his window that he narrates, got an additional inscription underneath it, which says, this artwork is being exhibited without permission of the author. So, you know, this sort of subversion, right? That there's an artwork on display there that's being subverted by this inscription, which Robakowski made them put on it, saying, you know, we're exhibiting this without permission. So, yeah.
I think that's something that, you know, those who try to control that message can't really like control what it actually looks like when you go into that gallery and see that work of art that is like with that description. That is just such a good example, I think. And I guess that leads also to the question of art-based resistance and how are people responding, how are artists responding, and maybe also institutions themselves. You mentioned one example of this standing institution that's still defending itself from being overtaken, but are there any other examples you can give us, or maybe like some themes that somehow link with it? I would assume that it's a very big topic amongst the artists.
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing about forms of resistance is that they again often come down to this question of Polishness, and a lot of the artists that are able to resist the Law and Justice government through their art do so through rethinking Polish history itself. So, for example, one of my favorite contemporary artists from Poland is Karol Radziszewski, who is an artist that tries to reread Polish history through an LGBT queer lens. And so one of his more famous series is a series of portraits of very important figures from Polish history, important writers, important, you know, even patriots, etc., who are alleged to have been gay or lesbian or queer. So he paints these portraits of these figures and you know, obviously really upsets and annoys nationalists and patriots by implying that this sort of white heteronormative narrative that is so dominant might not be true. And I find his work really provocative for that reason, because he directly engages with specific historical moments. And actually, he also tries to reread the transition from communism to capitalism through a queer lens, and in Poland specifically, and think of it in relation to what was happening in the 80s and 90s and in you know, the West, for example, in the HIV/AIDS crisis. And put these sort of regions, these two regions, in a kind of conversation, and in that way resist patriarchal nationalistic narratives. And I think it's incredibly compelling. And the effectiveness of this actually can be seen in the way that Piotr Bernatowicz, when he first took over the Center for Contemporary Art in Warsaw, the exhibition that was on at the time was a retrospective of Karol Radziszewski's work, which obviously is antithetical to everything that Bernatowicz believes in. And it resulted in some incredibly ridiculous sort of surveillance of who was coming to the exhibition, to the point that I was there with a group of art historians, one of whom had a baby, right, just a tiny little baby, and the person on the door said to us, "Oh, children are not allowed in this exhibition because it's got, you know, nudity and gay people or whatever is offensive to the average Polish person, according to PiS." But we were saying, "This is a baby; they can't speak." they
oh don't. My
God. And then they're like, "No children in the exhibition." And we're just like, "Can you not see how ridiculous you're being, because they're, you know, trying to protect children from LGBT influences or whatever."
Yeah, Chow has like famously never seen naked tits.
Yeah, exactly. And also, yeah, a baby like definitely has a very, you know, in-depth understanding of why there's this, you know, like a portrait of Lech Wałęsa here, but like read through like queer history and in relation to the history of solidarity. That's actually something really interesting that Karol Radziszewski does as well, think about the history of solidarity through the lens of its members who are trans and queer. So
Wow, thank you so much for giving that example. Actually, our next question was about your favorite Polish artists, so you partly gave us like an answer to that already. But if you could also give us more who would you recommend to follow?
So I would definitely recommend checking out Małgorzata Mirgatas, who was actually the artist that represented Poland at the last Venice Biennial. Mm-hmm. And she does a similar thing to Karol Radziszewski in that she rereads Polish history, but in her case, it's from the point of view of Romani people. She's a Roma artist herself, and so she inserts Roma characters and narratives into sort of broader Polish culture narratives. So again, this sort of subversion from within. I think that's what's really working right now, subverting from within, not, you know, going against Polish culture, but showing that it isn't homogenous and it isn't what PiS wants it to be, and it's never been like that. Mm-hmm. And there's also Daniel Rycharski, who is specifically thinking about the Polish countryside, and he's a gay man himself, and he's trying to go against this image of this homophobic countryside, you know, bumpkin kind of person, and actually work with local communities and think about the Polish countryside as a potentially diverse space. And he kind of makes artworks that are also very heavily in dialogue with folk culture, but he positions them in these new contexts. And finally, one of my favorite Polish artists right now is Maja Angom, who's a Polish Senegalese artist who's interested in questions of identity, questions of race, and she studied both languages in Poland and photography in London. She currently lives in London, and she's been trying to engage with some of the racial linguistics structures in the Polish language, and was also involved in a project associated with the Museum of Modern Art in Warsaw called Black is Polish, which was all about talking to the creative community in Poland and in the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests and trying to, again, rethink some of the narratives to do with Polishness, taking into account also race. Maja's work, I think, is incredibly exciting and engages with these questions in a very productive way.
We will write down all these names in the show notes in case you're not sure how to spell them.
Yes. Thank you so much for all these recommendations. One thing also I wanted to just add, like thinking, you know, about the long-term impact of those changes. I feel like, you know, you mentioned that people who are chosen for these very powerful positions, who are like given those the power to decide who's going to be exhibited, they obviously stay there for years, right? And like, for instance, Zachęta, it's a newly appointed person that's that took over. So I'm just wondering, like, how in terms of the future, I don't know, we usually end up with a positive note, but here I'm just like unable to see it, because it's like next 5 years or so, this person will be sat there. And is there any way to remove them? Can you like walk us through that?
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Actually, I don't know if there's any way to remove them. Yeah, nothing seems to have worked so far. People have been writing letters, you know, trade unions have been opposing these new appointments. And yeah, I don't know if the new government will be able to do that, because as we can see, even peace had to wait to get rid of the previous directors. They had to wait until their term came to an end.
Yeah. I guess the positive note we can end on is that good art continues to be made and interesting art continues to be made despite all of this. And in future episodes, we'll try to speak to artists and people who promote Polish art who can show what is still possible, even with the kind of limited opportunities that people get right now.
Yes.
Lovely. Yeah, I mean, that's perfect. That's a perfect summary. And I mean, again, we also don't want to be those people who replace someone on the political basis. That's not really the point. But it's just, I just wish, you know, there was space for people who used to contribute for these institutions who are very experienced to actually work there. And that's just one thing that makes
actually
me
qualified.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah, we just want good art. All I want, honestly, I just want good art, and I don't want bad art. And all that there is right now is bad art. So
yeah, yeah, no, thank you. Thank you very much. That was great. And yeah, see you soon. We'll be back with new episodes coming up soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.